Welcome to our audio theater program. Our first story, Barnaby Druthers tells Irene Adler about a mystery solved by the intrepid private investigator Harriet Holmes in Food for Thought. In our second story, an encore presentation of Serendip History Part 2, featuring a conversation between publicist Jenny Wild and Louisa May Alcott. Please enjoy.
Well, well, Miss Adler, heading to the grocery store, I see.
Do you need anything?
Perhaps some kippers, pork pie, scotch eggs, perhaps.
Perhaps you may have to do your own shopping.
Perhaps indeed. But now that a grocery store is mentioned, it recalls to mind a story I heard recently involving the noted private investigator, Harriet Holmes.
Harriet Holmes?
Indeed. Would you care to hear the story?
Please. Do tell.
As I understand, this story happens to be called Harriet Holmes in Food for Thought.
When living in strange times, it's those who can adapt who thrive. Adaptation is part of the job description. In my line of work, no plan goes according to design. There are always variables, random occurrences, matters of chance and coincidences that lead an investigator down dark alleys. In early April of the strangest year we've ever faced, the Schapapel's grocery store chain identified an inventory problem with its main store, and their internal security began an investigation that was hampered when the city was locked down due to the virus and non-essential travel was prohibited. It was a loosely defined quarantine, not a complete lockdown. You notice the lack of traffic on a regular workday. And although retail stores were closed, the food establishments, like the Schapapel's grocery chain, remained open. For months, the store seemed to return to normal with no inventory issues. In October, they identified another inventory issue and called me in. I have to observe social distancing and wear a mask. That's fair. I can get a lot of information from emails, from phone calls. Technology goes a long way. But a private investigator has instincts. We gain knowledge from body language, when the subject gives a tell that tells you he or she is lying. So I have a case in the time of quarantine, and the tools of the trade are severely hampered. But I can adapt. I'm Harriet Holmes, and I'm good at what I do. I didn't become a gumshoe for the love of shoes. I arrived at the grocery store during their normal business hours and took a door near the cash registers upstairs to the offices. We sat with a view overlooking the aisles. The paper products were a little low, but it seemed the rest of the store was running as normal. The store manager sat in one chair, and the head of internal security sat in another. I was across from both. Each of us remained 6 feet apart, like a triangle.
Harriet Holmes, are you sick? Feeling unwell at all, in any way?
Nope. You're Miss Carter, the store manager?
Yes. This is Bava, head of internal security.
Harriet Holmes, how are you feeling?
No one here has symptoms.
Not that it matters. You can have the thing and not know it for days.
We'll keep our distance. Tell me what you need from me from the beginning. Leave nothing out.
In March, we identified an inventory shortage. This could result from a number of reasons, but the most likely one is theft. We contacted internal security immediately.
Because of the quarantine, we had a difficult time investigating the matter, and there were no more incidents until this October when it happened again.
Was the first case ever closed?
It wasn't closed, but it wasn't moving forward either. But the second inventory loss was similar in scope to the first. So it's clear there's a problem of theft, not an issue of accounting.
Now, bear in mind, inventories are done every other quarter. So we identified the loss in April and October. but the loss could have occurred at any time during that time.
So you have not identified a specific day to watch footage from the security cameras?
We've done spot checks on the footage, but can't locate the exact time of, or evidence of the wrongdoing. We do think if we can isolate what happened and knew what we were looking for, we would be able to find evidence in the security footage.
Do you suspect a customer or vendor or employee?
We strengthened our security procedures after the first event on the possibility it was a customer. Since the event occurred again, it is less likely a customer caused the shortage. The vendors have logs backing up the deliveries. Therefore, although we think of our employees as family, we have to keep a clear head and assess the situation rationally. If there is a bad apple in the bunch, we have to remove it.
The missing inventory consisted of cases of beer, household products like razors, shampoo, toothbrushes, all easily resaleable on the internet, except for the beer. They probably kept the beer for themselves. I was issued an official name tag and a mask with a store logo on it. An employee by the name of Jansen gave me the tour.
Do you shop at Schapapples?
Is it required to work here?
No, but you find it makes things easier as long as you do it before or after your shift. Don't do it during your shift or you get fired. Just wanted to know how in-depth the tour should be. Anyway, here's bakery and the deli here.
How would they know?
Cameras up there, see? Also the Mick would see you in their walk-arounds.
Mick?
Manager in charge. When you've worked here as long as I have, you wind up thinking everyone knows the lingo. Sorry. So here's seafood next to its meat department. Come on.
I was shown the household section, the pharmacy, dairy, and the main part of grocery with aisles clearly identifying the products. Beer was in a corner. A camera was trained on the beer section. Cameras at every exit. Someone might make a run for it, but the store employees would know, so the product did not go out the front doors.
Here's the back room, kind of like a warehouse back here. The overstock is over there against the wall. That machine there is a baler. The product comes in loaded on pallets, and the night shift breaks it down. Puts up the product, and the cardboard gets put in the baler, gets crushed, wrapped, and sent back for recycling.
Nobody uses the back doors?
Pallets of the product come in on trucks, so the drivers use the back doors, but they have to be unlocked. And we have to call security to notify them.
There were cameras focused on the back door as well. The theft, though significant, was relatively small for there to be a conspiracy. The more involved in the plot, the easier it falls apart. It seems unlikely the stolen items would be taken out the back doors, where, once the date and time is identified, would clearly show the culprit in the act.
And here's the back corridor, the coolers for the meat, seafood, and dairy. Ignore the smell if you can, that's the trash by the trash chute.
What happens to the expired meat?
Frozen just before expiration and donated to shelters. The meat's good so long as it's frozen. I take it once a week. If it goes bad, then it gets tossed. Hey, Brad.
More cardboard for the baler. Watch out.
Brad's in meat department. I think you'll be shadowing him. Did I hear you right? You're going to be floating between departments. Are they prepping you for management?
Could be. What's next? We toured back rooms. There were steps going up to another level, but Jansen had never gone up there and wasn't sure exactly what would be found. It turns out there's the machinery that keeps the power and ventilation going. I'd investigate that further. For the rest of the day, I shadowed Jansen, but learned nothing except for the names of my coworkers. The following day, they told the employees I would be watching the usual instruction videos. Instead, I watched the security footage. There were some blind spots, but from what I could tell, if one could specifically know what to look for before or after an event, we would be able to identify a theft that is about to take place or after it took place. For appearance's sake, I punched the clock in and out. It's not usual for my line of work. I usually get paid a daily rate, plus expenses. This case was different. In the era of COVID, punching a clock for a client is the least of my worries.
The cuts of meat are marked on our side of the case, but you should probably know them by sight and if you get stuck behind the counter by yourself.
They put me on a Monday night with Brad as the teacher I was shadowing on the schedule. He was patient and knew his work. How long have you been behind the meat counter, Brad?
A year or so. Before that, I worked at a competitor.
Why did you make the change?
The management there. No room for advancement. Hey, make sure you change your gloves after each customer.
Sorry. Yes, you're right. I guess we don't have to conserve them? What if we run out?
Yeah, There's boxes of them back there.
We walked to the back door, which led to the back hallway I had been the other day.
Ignore the trash. There's the boxes, see?
When does the trash get thrown out?
At the end of the shift, at the end of the night. Something you only want to do once.
The night shift came in just before the doors closed. Pallets of food had been unloaded from a truck and placed in the back room. Brad introduced me to Paul, the night crew chief, and night crew of Madge and Bruce before I left. I'd be working with them in 2 days.
Waste of time.
Paul was not pleased with taking the time out of the evening to teach me what they do when I wouldn't be helping them in any way after tonight. I was in the way, and the team made sure I knew it. Would you prefer if I just sat over here and watched your work?
It's not personal. You're the fourth person in the past 3 months we've had to teach. No one winds up helping us, even when we're short-handed.
I didn't make this schedule.
No, I know. I know. Look, we're breaking down the pallet, putting the food on the boats.
The carts.
We call them U-boats, or boats. We bring the U-boats out to the aisles, put the freight up. The cardboard and plastic get recycled.
The pallets are huge. They seem to be mountains of food.
They're supposed to be 6 feet high, or less, but when you only have 3 load nights, or a whole store like this, you wind up getting large pallets.
Besides the main load, there were additional deliveries at night. Each time the door was opened, a call was made to security. One time during the night, they asked me to call. I chose to wait to see what happens. Within 10 minutes, we received a call from security about the door being opened. I advised of the load and logged it in. It was a sharp operation. Internal security had logs on their end, and they get audited. If any event involved this night crew, it would have to involve more than one person. And I was starting from the point that a conspiracy, though possible, was unlikely.
What have you found so far in your week, Miss Holmes?
The majority of your employees are in non-stop movement, Miss Carter. I am developing a theory, but we'll need to review the load nights. Once I've isolated my theory, I will need additional manpower to review security footage.
Agreed. Your expenses may have already cost more than the 2 thefts, but we can't have someone steal with impunity. Today it may be beer. Tomorrow, it may be the cash register.
Understood. Any theft will not be tolerated, and I will find the culprit. That night, the load came in. Another mountain of food. I went to the security room. I could see when the large pallet was stacked in the back room. The view from the security camera viewing the back corridor was obstructed. I returned downstairs and made my way to the corridor.
What can I do for you, Harriet?
Hey, Brad. Just working the night shift.
Hold your nose. Just get some trash out.
Ew.
We put the bags of trash in the chute and we push it with this pole here.
Who does the trash?
Anyone who's assigned to it, I guess. I take care of meat when I have to, so it doesn't stink too much. But most of the meat is preserved before it goes bad and donated, so I don't have to do it that often.
So anyone can throw out the trash on any given night. Got it.
You may have got it. Not sure if you want it.
What do you have for us, Ms. Holmes?
We're all very anxious since your call.
I have the answer. It's not 100% conclusive, but if handled the right way, you will in all likelihood get your confession. Let me play the footage. Monday, September 14th, 8 p.m.
That's the back room.
Yes. The back room is where your load comes in. When the load comes in, if it's a big load, the pallet is rather large. In fact, once it's brought in, it towers almost to the ceiling, correct? Here's a view of the back corridor.
That's where the trash chute is.
Notice the trash sitting under the chute. Now the load comes in.
The load blocks the view of the corridor.
Until the load is broken down, yes. Let me fast forward.
trash is thrown out.
That means nothing, Miss Holmes. It doesn't show the crime.
No, it doesn't. But that's the point of exit for the products. It's not taken out the front doors or the back doors. It's taken out the trash chute. Now, let's look at the view of inside the store. Same night, September 14th. Here's an employee punching out 7:53 p.m. We'll follow this employee.
It's not against policy to shop after a shift.
I know that. And the employee knows that. The employee is putting into their carriage beer. 6 cases of beer. That's quite a bit, is it not? One would think they're going to throw a party. Oh, here they are in household items.
This is matching the items that were not accounted for during inventory.
Exactly. Now, note where the employee goes.
Behind meat.
It's 8:31 p.m. It's in between shifts. No one is clocking out at that point. The load is blocking the view of the camera. The trash hasn't been thrown out yet. Wait 6 minutes. It doesn't take long to get it out the chute. Now here's the view.
Nothing in the cart.
The product went out the chute. Once I identified the loss occurred during a load night, I could remove 4 out of the 7 nights to review. I had help from my own employee, Otis. Here's a separate invoice for his work. He viewed tapes of the evenings until we identified the correct night. We have the culprit.
I never would have thought.
I've taken the liberty of asking the employee to join us up here at 5 p.m. It's 5 p.m. right now.
Am I interrupting?
No, Miss Jansen. Sit down, please.
Yes, Miss Jansen. We have something to show you, and then we have some things to discuss.
Juliet Jansen was immediately terminated. As of now, there is no pleading in her court case. We all wear masks. In the quarantine, we wear masks whenever in public, or whenever we meet folks from less than 6 feet away. But there's another kind of mask, the kind of mask worn as our public face, when internal interests and judgment would bear another. Jansen may wear one at work, one at home. But there was another worn when a theft occurred, and more than one theft to make it worse. The Schapopel's chain hired me to root out the bad apple before it infected the bunch. And that's what I do. I'm Harriet Holmes, and I'm good at what I do. I didn't become a gumshoe for the love of shoes.
Good evening. Welcome to Serendip History. I'm Alice Dare Crook. There are times throughout the centuries when unique individuals come together and achieve extraordinary moments of inspiration. For instance, in 1841, when Ralph Waldo Emerson invited Henry David Thoreau to his property in Concord so Henry could visit Walden Pond and just chillax. And there was the time when Andy Warhol visited Lou Reed's apartment, and all he had in the pantry was a banana and a couple of cans of soup. Now, in our first story, an important figure in the world of literature meets with her publisher's editor's assistant to discuss a book proposal in today's Moment of Serendip History. It is 1870, March. Celebrated author Louisa May Alcott has achieved phenomenal success with Little Women and Good Wives, which was part two of the Little Women story. Fans of her work flock to her home in Concord, Massachusetts, daily in search of an autograph and personal interaction. Come with us now, as another visitor knocks on her door in this journey to discovery with our presentation of Little Women, Little Help.
Who is it?
I'm here to speak with Louisa May Alcott.
Oh, I'm sorry. Miss Louisa is not in.
Really? Are you supposed to be the help?
As helpful as I can be, madam.
Then maybe you can help me, because I was sent by the Roberts brothers. Thomas Niles specifically gave me Louisa's photograph, and that image looks remarkably like you. See? So are you the unlucky twin sister in a domestic servitude?
I'm sorry for the deception. You see, so many strangers come calling. Sometimes 100 visitors a day. I find it can be nearly impossible to work. Yes, I'm Louisa.
Nothing so disastrous for those seeking fame than to actually achieve it, hey? Am I right? Must be difficult. Authors like Sarah Chandler would love to have your problems.
I'm sorry, that name is unfamiliar to me.
That's my point, hon. I'm here on business. Should we discuss it at the door, or...
I do apologize. Please, come in, miss.
Virginia Wiles. Call me Jenny.
We can sit in Father's study, if that's to your liking.
How is Bronson, the old thing?
Father is unexpectedly out at the moment.
He's a sweetheart, a joy to converse with, really. Not so much to read, though. If he could write half as well as he talks, we'd be asking him for a sequel, but his work...
Tablets.
Was that what it was called? Something about his work. I just looked at the title and stopped reading.
You said you're from Roberts Brothers. They're out of Boston, correct?
You're not kidding, poor dears. The mistake of a civilization, can you believe it?
I'm sure, but, I mean, you don't sound particularly Bostonian.
Thank you, you're so kind. I'm from New York, dear. I'm the one they contact when you get serious about making money.
So what is it that I can do for you, Miss Wiles?
Ginny, please. I'm here because Little Women is a product like no other. Every household wants to hear of the tales of the March family.
Product? A novel, you mean? Ginny, I'm gratified by its reception, of course.
Niles told me he had to do some convincing in order for you to write Little Women in the first place. Was he right? I'm willing to bet that's how he got saddled with tablets, but he won't tell me for sure.
There was a wide range of topics discussed before I settled in to write the work.
Then let me tell you, we have a number of ideas you're going to love. We need to write a sequel. And by we, I mean you. But we'll all profit together, okay?
I wrote a second story about the Marches called Good Wives.
Yeah, that was smart. But let's talk branding. When you have a hit like Little Women, you write another story with those characters. You need to call it Little Women 2. Readers need to recognize the title.
Really? I had no idea. I would have thought they would have recognized the author's name.
You think that, huh? Tell me, what was the book Charlotte Bronte wrote?
Oh, Jane Eyre, of course.
Yeah, what was the next one she wrote?
Oh, well, I suppose.
Yeah. What was anything else she's written? Am I right? But now, if she had written Jane Eyre 2, The Quickening, people would have remembered it and bought it.
What does The Quickening mean?
It probably is a baking term, like adding yeast to dough or something. But, Louisa, we need to focus on you. You wrote Little Women. Readers love Little Women. So the next book should be...
What do you suggest, Ginny?
Littler Women. They get even littler this time around.
That's not really what the little in Little Women implies.
Littler Women. Honey, I Shrunk the Women. Something like that. Professor Frederick builds a shrinking device in his study and oops, no one step on Meg. It's genius.
Perhaps that's an idea best enjoyed by its absence.
It's part of a trilogy. Little Women, Littler Women, and Littlest Women. It's rule of three, hon. We can't go wrong.
What's the rule of three?
It's the rule that says if you write three books, you make more money than writing one.
I see. Very enlightening.
Just ideas. You're the writer. I'm the ideas person. But any idea is going to work for a sequel, even a bad idea. In the marketplace, we're just looking for the least bad idea, and I have a million of those.
A million least bad ideas.
Try this one. Little Women 2, Wrath of Marmee. If revenge is a dish best served cold, Marmee can bring some cold dishes from the kitchen.
That's not really in keeping with Marmee's character in Little Women. Have you actually read the book?
It was time to read. Look, let's talk globally here. Maybe Little Women is just episode 4 of a 9-part saga. You could go early and focus on prequels.
That's not really what I had in mind.
Everyone loves prequels. Too bad. But hey, you're the writer.
Yes. Speaking of which, I should get back to the writing.
Maybe you could write something about War and Peace or Crime and Punishment? We just need to come up with a good title.
You've certainly given me a lot to think about, Ginny.
I've got a million of them.
But we don't have to go through that entire number right now, do we, Ginny?
The important thing is that you agree to write another story, but you have to let readers know it's a sequel to Little Women.
What's your least bad idea, Ginny?
Least bad idea. How about Little Men?
Little Men?
Little Men, you know, it's a sequel to Little Women. Write what you like and call it Little Men.
And if I write that, will you take your leave?
You have my word.
Then you have mine. Little Men it is.
Perfect. It's going to be a bestseller because if there's one thing I know, it's that men love to be called little.
Harriet Holmes, Food for Thought, featured Olivia Wadsworth as Harriet Holmes, with Devin Richtmeyer and Humphrey Ralston as Irene and Barnaby, featuring Kurt Boucher, Stella Copperfield, Ilana Kornblit, Jeff Savage, and Jason Gulas. Serendip History Part 2 featured the narration of Jandy Hanna and Olivia Wadsworth as Louisa May Alcott and KJ Johansson as Ginny Wilde. We hope you enjoyed the program, and may all your journeys bring you back to a happy home.
Come along, Dr. Robert, Miss Gentry. We must travel to the year 2020.
Oh, must we go there, Professor?
That's where we're needed, Miss Gentry. We must tell everyone to wash their hands for at least 20 seconds.
They need to be reminded, Professor.
Come, come, Robert. Think it through. Did you wash your hands before stepping into the temporal vortex?
Well, that's a personal question.
I thought as much. Wash hands every time for at least 20 seconds. Make it 30 for you, Robert.
He's washing his hands now, Professor.
If everyone does their part, we'll beat this thing together. And that's the best lesson you'll get from Professor A today.